Okay, next I'd like to introduce Trent Kim. Trent is a sophomore at The Ohio State University majoring in economics. His main area of interest is health policy analysis in the context of achieving universal health care coverage. Apart from being a full-time undergraduate student, he is also a varsity member of The Ohio State University's men's lightweight crew team and works for the Ohio State Senate as an office page.
Thanks, Gabrielle. So I'm Trent Kim, and today I want to take a look at uninsurance, one of the favorite topics of this conference, and especially its effect on minority racial groups. I took a look at how different differential health policies have differing effects on minority groups. I know a lot of people at this conference really subscribe to single payer healthcare, single payer universal, and I think that's great. But in the context of this year and the health reforms that are foreseeable, I took a look at really the incrementalist health reforms and what that does for minority racial groups. But on the note of that we don't have universal health care yet, I was thinking last night about how I could start this talk off with a bang. So I asked God, you know, good source. I asked him, will we ever have universal health insurance? Will we ever have universal coverage? And the man upstairs told me, yes. You can tell the people at the conference yes, but not in my lifetime. So on that note, I'd like to sort of frame this talk with what's happening now. And so this is sort of I took this from the CPS, the current population survey data, to try to look at current health insurance holdings among minorities. So you can see the typical, I guess, factor that we look at, which is uninsurance, and you can see that Hispanics and African Americans have higher uninsurance rates than non-Hispanic whites. But I think it's important to note that where the sources of where each racial group is getting their insurance, you can see that the non-Hispanic whites disproportionately take up private insurance, while African Americans take up, and Hispanics as well, take up public insurance more so than non-Hispanic whites. So with that in mind, let's take a look at these health policy reforms. So when we talk about health policy, when we talk about the government providing health insurance, it's essentially a form of income redistribution. The government is taking in tax money, and we're giving it to people in the form of health insurance. We're giving it to people, these uninsured people who are low income, and these people who typically do not have labor attachment. We could see that in the previous slide, in that people didn't have, or in that specific racial groups such as African Americans and Hispanics didn't take up employer-provided insurance as much. So really what we're doing here from a government policy standpoint is to redistribute this money, and the question becomes, who are we redistributing this money to? Who are we giving this health insurance to? So what I did is I took a look at two of the most prominent health policy scenarios. As I mentioned, these are both incremental reform scenarios. The first is a liberal reform, which is we would expand public health insurance, and I'll speak a little bit more about that as we continue. And this liberal reform would target, in particular, the low-income population, which we would provide public insurance to. At the same time, I took a look at the conservative option, the typical conservative option, which is to provide tax credits for non-group insurance. So the government would give you a tax credit, and then you would use this to go out on the direct purchase market and buy your health insurance. So for a frame of reference, Barack Obama, his health plan kind of incorporates both these conservative and liberal elements, while John McCain's plan is pretty much this conservative reform. So that's how the candidates sort of stack up. So let's take a closer look the liberal reform. So the kinds of reforms I looked at in particular were if the government would expand government-provided insurance, especially Medicaid, up to 100% of the poverty threshold. And I know technically you should be able to get Medicaid even if you're below, or if especially if you are below 100% of the poverty threshold, but that's not the case right now with the kind of health system we have. So what this would do is, this would just say just theoretically we covered all of those under 100% of the poverty threshold through Medicaid, what would that do? And I also took a look at if we expanded Medicaid to 185%, but for the sake of time, I won't cover that in this discussion. So on a general macro level, what would this do? We would have 6 million an increase of 6 million in public insurance. We would have 6 million people would enter the ranks of Medicaid. They'd be enrolled. At the same time, we do have these negative externalities. You actually find some decreases in health insurance take-up because of this provision of government insurance. This is because people are moving from employer insurance to public insurance, and so they're moving, and so that's where we find this net decrease of 1 million from employer insurance and net decrease of 1 million from non-group insurance. So we have these kind of differential factors that result in the net for a 4 million person increase in enrollment for public insurance altogether. So this is what I'm really interested in. This is kind of the simulation of what would happen based on each differential racial ethnic group. So we can see here that African Americans, and I know these numbers are actually different because this is the number of new beneficiaries, not the net. This is just number of beneficiaries in total. So we can see here that it's pretty striking. Each Hispanics are actually benefited the most, or I guess they're benefited considerably in this plan, and that percentage of population number is the percent of the Hispanic population that would be covered as a result of this plan. So we'd have 10.5% of Hispanics covered insurance who were previously uninsured if this plan were to come into play. So we have these numbers for liberal reform, and So let's move on to the conservative option. So with this conservative reform, as I mentioned, it's providing tax credits for the direct purchase market. Particularly the kind of tax credit I looked at was a tightly targeted tiered non-group credit, which would be fully available to families with income below $30,000, phasing up as income rises to $60,000. So this plan would cost $22.6 billion, big numbers, for the federal government. And so this is about the same federal expenditures we saw in the liberal plan. I don't know if you remember, but in the liberal plan, in the 100% option, the government would spend $26 billion. So it's approximately the same expenditure, give or take a few billion, which is, I know, give or take. So let's look at the macro level of this conservative reform. We do have a considerable increase of non-group insurance due to this plan because of the wide range that this plan kind of covers. We see the net increase of 12 million into the non-group insurance market. So this is a good thing. We see also this employer number, and this is a strong decrease of 5 million moving over from employer insurance into the non-group market. But this is the effects when we look across racial divides are a little bit more stark. When we see especially that 8.81 number down there, we see non-Hispanic whites are benefited quite a bit in this model. 8.81 million non-Hispanic whites are newly insured, while only 1.08 Hispanics and 1.08 million African Americans are covered in this model. So you see these different kinds of effects. Also, you see the negative effects, as I mentioned, from the employer insurance and the public insurance. And the reason why the model looks like this, the reason why these differences are so stark, is because what the model does is the model assumes that current insurance take-up will remain constant even after this plan is put into place. So the thing is, not many people take up non-group insurance currently because it's expensive, just the market is very hard. It's difficult for African Americans and Latinos to take up non-group insurance, and thus their take-up rates are very low. So if we implement this plan, we see that the take-up rates are still low, and thus we have this extreme sort of racial gap, as you might have it. So in conclusion, you've seen these three kinds of distributive equities. You've seen that public insurance expansions up to 100% of poverty benefit Hispanics the most. You see that 100, or I guess you didn't see, but public insurance expansions up to 185% of poverty benefit African Americans the most. And then non-Hispanic whites are benefited, as you just saw in that last slide, by tax credits for non-group insurance. So you have these three kinds of justice, three kinds of distributive equity as we redistribute these funds. And it's clear to see that justice for all is a really difficult concept to kind of achieve from a policy level, and a difficult concept to sort of make judgments on from a normative level. So I'm not going to do any of that today. But I will leave you that as we approach this next round of health reform and this new administration, these are things that the new administration should look over. Thank you for your time.